good evening, you guys. I'm K2 Romeo India Whiskey. My name is Dick. And this is the 1772 version of the TechNet, according to my counting, which started back in 1982. It's a gathering of curious radio amateurs who want to teach each other what they learned with their hands-on experience in ham radio with transmitters and antennas and feed lines and propagation and the 27 or so different kinds of ham radio. 2-meter FM radio, which you're listening to right now, is just one of the 27 kinds. Arguably, it's one of the most educational hobbies in the world. The TechNet starts at 8 o'clock. For the last 20 or so years, maybe 15 years, it runs 4 solid hours. We used to have only 1 hour and then 2 and then 3. People were always complaining that didn't have enough time to get in their questions and comments. What took me now that it's broken up into 3 sections. Let me drop. The first section of the TechNet is where people sign in because they do have a question or a comment. They sign in by giving us their call letters and their name, because I'm so darn forgetful, and say yes, which means you do have a question or a comment. You don't have to sign in just because you're listening. After, let me think now, 1982 to now is what, 37 years? Yes, 37 years, September of 82. After 37 years, we believe somebody is listening. So that's already been proven. The second section of the net is run by Roy AC2GS. Dr. Roy runs the mailbag and what he calls science talk, real good stuff. And he's going to have a discussion about human hibernation, among other things, tonight. The third section is run by Paul, WS2N, with the space report. And there's always a lot going on in space. It's hard to believe that in a few years, man's going to be back on the moon, hopefully to stay a lot longer this time. Let me drop. So do we have anybody to sign in tonight? As I said, because of the noise in the machine, it's going to be a little bit more difficult, but I think we'll make it. I'm coming in by the eastern input because for whatever reason, for my location tonight, the machine is pretty noisy on the Glen Oaks input, so I'm going on the Selden input, which is very nicely being reflected to this repeater. So if you do have a question or a comment, please sign in right now. Give us your call letters and your name. K2RIW listening.
A2SAY, Doug.
Okay, we got WA2SAY, Doug. Haven't heard from Doug in a long time. And Doug has a brand new ultra-compact vector network analyzer. He's got a new toy. Guarantee he's going to have some great questions about that. I was a little bit slow to understand a vector network analyzer when I started working with them. The very early versions by Hewlett-Packard were kind of hard to use. The later versions, which had a lot more microprocessors inside, my goodness, is that a useful machine? It's a super-duper antenna analyzer, you could call it, but it does a lot more than that. Okay, do I have anyone else to check in tonight to the TechNet? Give me a call letters and name right now. K2RIW listening. I was pretty sure Mike was going to sign in, K2AMZ. Aren't you going to sign in, Mike, with even your why question?
Okay, K2AMZ. Seriously, Dick, I didn't have any comments or questions for the net. Basically, I was just playing HF. I'm getting over a bad cold, but I don't want to take up time for somebody with a serious question. There's got to be somebody out there with a serious question. So like I said before, I'm going to go into listening mode, but it doesn't mean I can't pop in if something strikes my interest for the comment. But let's open it up for people with questions.
Good idea, Mike. Okay. Anyone else to sign into the TechNet? Give me your call letters and name right now because you do have a question or a comment. Maybe we're going to have a short net tonight or a longer technical science section and a longer space report. We'll soon find out. One last call. Anyone who's got a question or a comment for the net, give me a call letters and name right now. I heard somebody trying to sign in, but didn't quite make it. Give it another try, sir. I'm guessing, Doug, that you're coming in by way of the Selden input. So WA2SAY. Take your time, Doug. You're number one on the runway, and you may be the only aircraft taking off tonight. The B2 SAY. Haven't heard from you in a long time. And have you found somebody to install all those antennas on your roof lately? K2RW, you got it, Doug.
And somebody to put on a couple of antennas, but anyway, I don't have. I just wanted to follow up a little bit on the Nano VNA. I sent you tonight, as a matter of fact, about 10 minutes ago, a message that I received from a technical group on the Internet, on which has information on the Nano VNA, including some plots of something the guy was... And you... I will forward that information to you, and you can then do what you want with it. It's been too cold to go out tennis today, or even during the whole week. W-A-2-S-A-Y, back to Ned.
Yeah, the machine is behaving a little bit crazy tonight. You were solid into the Sheldon repeater, and it continuously was repeating you. There was a little bit of dropout from time to time out of the E5 machine, which... is being UHF, is being microwave linked. So I'm having trouble believing that maybe the microwave antenna is also getting a noise tonight from the wind or rain or whatever's going on up there. Yes. I see I'm dropping out also. So I'm not quite sure what's going on. Maybe Lou NY2H can explain it to us why we come out of the E5, the 975, 375, the Sheldon machine, we might have a steady signal, and occasionally we have a dropout on the repeat to 85. A vector network analyzer with a fancy name like that, it scares people. In the early days when Doug and I cut our teeth at Airborne Instruments Laboratory, if an engineer came to our desk and said, hey, here's an amplifier, or here's a filter, I want you to sweep it and tell me what's its response. And you would go and get a sweep signal generator. You'd get a crystal detector. You'd hook the crystal detector into an oscilloscope. And so you'd be supplying the signal and to the device on the test, sweeping the signal from frequency 1 to frequency 2, you know, F low to F high, looking at the crystal detector output, maybe with an amplifier, if the signal was too weak because the device had too much insertion loss. So you assembled all this equipment, and somebody at Hewlett-Packard got the idea, hey, let's put all that stuff into one box. The transmitter, the amplifier, the receiver, the display, the oscilloscope, the detector with logarithmic detector and XY plotting or polar plotting. Let's put all of that together in one box, fed by a microprocessor, by which the person just walks up to the machine, tells it what's the F low and what's the F high. And some of those vector network analyzers will sweep a ridiculous amount of spectrum. You could make a modern-day vector network analyzer sweep from 1 megacycle to 18 gigahertz and give you a continuous display of what's going on there, where each sweep is, a few milliseconds apart. So you're looking at it in real time. If you're turning the screws on a tunable filter, on the individual filter elements, you'll be watching the shape of the filter change in real time. I mean, you wouldn't even know that it's sweeping you. You just see this continuous curve on the screen, and you watch the curve crawl around as you twist the controls. Beautiful machine. So, and what will it do for you? It'll tell you what is the standing wave ratio on the input, and if you got the full four-port machine, it'll tell you what is the standing wave ratio on the output. Simultaneously, you can have four displays on the screen. Make the screen break up into four separate sections. So, input reflection coefficient, displayed as either reflection coefficient in dBs of reflection signal, or as a standing wave ratio. That's the S11. The S21 is the forward gain of the device. That would be the second display. The third display would be the S12. That's the reverse gain. In other words, if you feed a signal into the output, how much comes out of the input? That's the third display. And then the fourth display is what's the reflection coefficient on the output. You can have all of those displays going simultaneously with a full-blown four-port, I think they call it a four-port or a two-port vector network analyzer with four displays. You don't really need all of those ports. Most of the time, just getting a reflection of the input or gain going through the device on the test is more than enough. But now you can ask for that to be displayed as an XY plot or as a polar plot. The polar plot is where it's displaying, it's displaying amplitude versus phase angle. That's really, amplitude versus phase angle, a reflection signal, really is a Smith chart. That's what a Smith chart is. How much signal is reflected, what amplitude is that signal, which is really a reflection from the center of the screen toward the outer perimeter. And the angle, whether it's at 12 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 9 o'clock, that tells you whether or not it's an inductive input, a capacitive input, a resistive input, high or low resistance. So that's what a polar plot of a Smith chart really is. So a vector network analyzer is a really fancy machine. It's got a little bit of a learning curve, but it's worth making the investment from my point of view. So how many of those displays have you tried so far, and how many things have you tested so far, Doug? So the A2SAY, with this brand new toy, a micro vector network analyzer, which I think you said is, I think it's even under $100 in the true, here we go, Doug, W-A-2-S-A-Y, K-2-I-W. Take your time. You're the only guy you're flying tonight.
Okay, Dick. Actually, you got to get the name right. It's nano VNA. There is such a device as a micro VNA. The micro VNA starts the course at $500. The nano VNA costs $50. And it does just about all those things that you mentioned. Now, I haven't really buzzed that out. What I really bought it for was to tune my 2-meter vertical antenna. And it's been too cold to go out and do that. But anyway, that chart, that is email that I mentioned to you, is available to anyone who is interested. And if you want, I will either I will go and find out if I can see if the fellow's email address, or I can forward it to anybody who gives me their email address. I was starting to get a little bit overpowered here or something. Let's make sure I am still online. WA2SAY, back to that.
Well, you're definitely online and coming through very well, Doug. Was there somebody else about to talk to us? Who was that?
Hi, WB2 Alpha Hotel Kilo, Chester. My question is to the SAY station. Does that come with a book of instructions, or is it difficult to get it going and understand it? The instruction manual, over.
Fred, it does not come with a book of instructions, but there are instructions on the net. There are several places where you can get instructions, download instructions to how to work the thing. And I don't have those or URLs right at my fingertips at the moment. But if you look up the, you just go into Google and ask, and you will find at least four or five different sites which have useful information as to how to program the thing, how to calibrate it. It's touch screen sensitive, so you can pick up a whole batch of stuff off the touch screen and set it to whatever you need to do, and you can calibrate it and whatever. So, yes, I wish there was an instruction manual, but as far as I know, there is not a specific one. But there is a lot of information out there that you can use. WA2SAY, back to net.
Got any further questions on that, Chester? Because I've got a couple of questions for Doug as soon as you ask yours. To B2AHK, K2IW. Go ahead, Chester.
Yeah, well, I just want to mention that on the various sites where you can buy things from China to do this and to do that, it sounds great, but then when you get it, there are very rudimentary instructions. Half of it in one-tenth or one-third of it in Chinese confusing languages to explain things, pidgin English, I guess you call it, for want of a better word. And leaves my head scratching. I have something in, I bought to tune up a duplexer. And the front panel has buttons on it, but they're not even marked what the buttons are for. So I just put it on the side. I paid like $50 myself. It might be the same thing. I don't know if it's the same thing. It might be. And for lack of information, they give you a little one or two page sheet, but it's all in Chinese pidgin English. And less than desirable instructions have caused me to put it on the side and not even attempt to try to figure it out.
T2GS?
EC2GS, K2IW. Go ahead, Dr. Roy.
Yeah, thanks, Dick. I don't own one last week, but I kind of run a 10-meter net on Sunday mornings, and one of the gentlemen is fascinated with the subject, has it, talks about it, and I was talking with him just this morning about it. He tells me that the IO group, there's a lot of places you can Google and you can look for. If you type in groups with a plural S, .io, it's like the old Yahoo groups, and they have a nano VNA group. There's one that has a English guide, about a 33-page instruction guide for the nano VNA. He also told me that you should try and buy it through legitimate channels. Apparently, it was designed by a Japanese engineer, and he had it made in China, but other Chinese companies cloned it and sell it for $50. So I think the present model is called the Net H. The Japanese gentleman is apparently working on his next version, which is going to be called, I'm told, Nano VNA X. It's going to have a larger touch screen, so people with vision problems probably will look forward to a larger touch screen to control the device. Sounds very interesting. I was considering purchasing it just for a new toy and a gadget, but hearing about the Nano VNA X, it's supposedly coming out early next year, I may hold off until the bigger screen and the slightly newer options are available.
What do you believe the Nano VNA X has over the ordinary Nano VNA? What's going to change that you know about, Roy? Go ahead.
Well, the only sure thing based on what I was talking to the gentleman this morning was that the touch screen is going to be a larger version. I assume that they're going to tweak up the specs a little bit, make it you know, more linear, extend its range. It has an incredible published range. Sometimes they'll even kind of in software lock it down to a lower bandwidth just to make sure that its precision isn't undermined. So I'm assuming that it's going to be tweaked and the screen will get bigger.
Yeah, when you're using a Hewlett-Packard Vector Network Analyzer or Tektronix or Anritsu, these are some of the popular brand names. If you only care about the filter you're tuning, that let's assume that your filter runs from 100 to 150 megacycles. So you might set the scan from a little bit below 100 to a little bit above 150, a little bit further than the thing you want to test. As opposed to if the VNA can sweep from 1 meg to 5,000 megs, you would think, gee, leave it sweeping that wide all the time. Well, there's a disadvantage of sweeping that wide. It only stops at a certain number of places, like a 200 or 400 or 1200 spots, gives you a dot on the screen and connects all the dots. So you get a higher resolution picture with finer details if you set it for a smaller number of megacycles of scan. And in some cases, it'll sweep a little bit faster. In your case, Doug, you believe that you have to wait until you've got good weather so you can go out there with your micro, with your nano VNA, and connect it directly to the antenna you're trying to tune. Let me drop. And yes, that is an ideal way to do it. But the beauty of a VNA is that if you tested it from the shack, just to know first before you start off, or what is the capability, what is your antenna doing right now before you're doing any tuning? And maybe you don't have to do any tuning. Maybe it's good enough. And by the way, 2-to-1 standing wave ratio, in many cases, is more than good enough. That only represents half a dB of performance as opposed to ideal 1-to-1 standing wave ratio. Yes, your transmitter might not be happy with a 2-to-1 on an HF band. On a VHF band, our transmitters are pretty forgiving. They'll take a 3-to-1 or a 4-to-1 standing wave ratio before the transmitter starts complaining in many cases. But when you're testing it from the shack, the only difference you've got is that extra feed line in there, which is really an insertion loss. It's an attenuator. Let's assume that your particular feed line is pretty long and pretty thin, and it's got 5 dB of loss. Well, the signal going out to the antenna is going to be lost by 5 dB. If the antenna is not absolutely perfect in its tuning, not exactly a 50 ohm load, if it's a little bit mistuned, it's reflecting a certain amount of signal. The signal will come back down the cable, another 5 dB of loss, and you'll see the signal in the shack. So everything you see in the shack, in my example, has got 10 dB of extra loss. And when you're plotting the standing wave ratio of the antenna, which is really reflection coefficient versus frequency, let me drop. You want to look at the bottom of the bathtub curve of insertion loss versus, I said insertion loss, really reflection coefficient. You want to look from minimum reflection at the resonant frequency is what's going to happen. So your curve that you're going to get is going to have an extra 5 dB of insertion, correction, 10 dB of insertion loss, because you're going through the 5 dB of cable twice in my example. And so you can easily offset the screen or just calibrate your head as to what you're seeing. And so making the measure in the shack most of the time is 95% as good as measuring the signal right at the antenna, with one exception. Right at the antenna, you can see the exact phase angle. I know if the antenna is capacitive, which it is when you tune too high, or when you tune too low, or inductive when your scanning is too high in frequency compared to the resonance. So that's kind of academic. You don't really have to know that. It's sort of automatic. The average antenna, dipole-like antenna, when you give it a signal that's too low in frequency, it's going to act like a capacitor. You give it a signal that's too high in frequency, above resonance, it's going to act like an inductor. And right at resonance, it's going to act like a resistor, hopefully a 50 ohm resistor. So so you give up the phase angle information a little bit. Well, you could actually, with some vector network analyzers, you can calibrate it for the cable length. Use the cable as part of the calibration procedure, and by Weigers of its microprocessor, it takes out the phase shift and the amplitude shift of the cable. And so with a real good vector network analyzer, let me drop. With a proper calibration procedure using that cable, putting a short and open and a dummy load at the end of the cable during the cal procedure, a modern-day HP VNA will calibrate out, take away all of the characteristics of the cable, and so electronically it will be placing itself right at the antenna. But I'm guessing your nano VNA might not have all of that capability, but all you really care about is what's called S11, reflection coefficient versus frequency, which really is the raw data for standing wave ratio. So an awful lot of the measurements as to what's the beginning health of your antenna before you tune it, you could measure that from the shack, in my opinion, Doug, and I think we mentioned that to you last week, and I think you were going to give that a try. Tell me once again, because I'm so forgetful, what is the lowest and highest frequency your nano VNA will go to? I'm guessing it's going to go from quite a bit less than 1 megacycle to something like 500, 600 megs, something like that. W-A-2-S-A-Y, K-2-L-I-W. You got it, Doug.
Well, the frequency range, I know it goes to 900 megahertz. I'm not sure where it starts. I think it starts at 1 megahertz, but it might start a little bit lower. I'm not sure. You mentioned, let me see. Now I'm trying to remember all of it you mentioned. I'm not going to try and measure the SWR from the shack. I've already got an SWR meter that measures from the shack, and it looks good. I'd like to see what it actually is. I'm going to let it drop for a second and come back. Okay. I wanted to mention one other thing. One of the things you can use this kind of a device... system which you can use to do it, but if you're tuning up a filter that has that you can short out each individual element, you can go through each element from the input port to the output port, rotate halfway around the Smith chart each time, and you will wind up with a perfectly tuned filter every time.
Yeah, I think that's cool. The Dishall probe technique. Mr. Dishall, I think is his name, invented this procedure by which you short and open the tuning screws on the various elements within a filter, and you can get a very good first tuning of it. But with a good sweeping system, whether it be a nano VNA, a micro VNA, a VNA, or just a sweep generator and a crystal detector, once you're getting a full real-time display, or near real-time display, without a whole lot of flicker, turning the knobs on a filter is a little bit like a blind man walking up a hill. The tilt of your feet tells you which way is uphill, even though you can't see the hill. You know what I mean? And so you know what the shape of a good filter is going to look like, and you tune the tuning adjustments, until you get that particular shape. Now, my guess is your particular nano VNA probably doesn't have a great big memory capability where it will allow you to calibrate your cable. You know, whenever you're connecting a VNA between the VNA, a cable, into your device on the test, the cable itself, if it's not an extremely short cable, has some characteristics that you would like to take back out. And a calibration procedure with a full-blown vector network analyzer has enough memory and enough microprocessor that during the cal procedure, it's measuring the exact insertion loss and the exact phase shift of your cable at each of its frequencies. If you set it to sweep from 1 to 100 megs, it might sweep every 1 megacycle. It might take a measurement every 1 megacycle. In other words, it measures the insertion loss and the phase angle at 1 meg, then goes to 2 meg, makes the measurement, goes to 3 megs, wants the measurement, and so on. Every one of those dots between 1 meg and 100 megs, in my example, was 100 pieces of data. Those 100 pieces of data are stored in memory, and then when it's displaying during the time you're making the real measurement of your device on the test, it's adjusting the signal on the screen according to those parameters that are in the memory, and therefore it's giving you on the screen the characteristics of your device on the test independent of your testing. I'm guessing your nano VNA doesn't have all of that capability. Now, you mentioned the screen. In other words, I think you're telling me your nano VNA does not require a separate oscilloscope or a separate display device, a separate, I can't even think what they're called, but you know what I mean. The screen itself probably is a liquid crystal screen, which displays the stuff you're looking at while you're making the measurement. Is that true, Doug? The B2SAY, K2RIW?
Roger that, Dick. It's a full-color liquid crystal. I guess it's liquid crystal. It's a full-color, little, small display, maybe an inch and 7/8 by 2.5 or something like that. Touch sensitive. And one of the things I wanted to mention was you had mentioned earlier that you can shrink the measurement area so that you get more detail. Well, this thing will do, I think, 100 points of data over the sweep, so you have to make the sweep relatively narrow in order to get any detail. Let me see, what else was I going to say? The dish, I've used the dish hall technique a couple of times, several times, as a matter of fact. When Bruce had scrounged up a whole batch of waveguide filters, I took him into Ademco there, and we tuned up a whole batch of them, and we also found up some of the wooden tunes. And I have also found out that if you can't tune it to dish hall, you just can't tune it. It just is not going to go, no matter what you do to the tuning screws. Anyway, I think we covered pretty much everything. I'm going to try and do a few more things with this thing. The information that I've found in this group's I.O. thing, I got to get to that. If I haven't, I may have already been into that, but I'm not sure, so I have to go and look into that. I really do need more information. Oh, and the answer to your question, you don't need a computer, but you can apparently connect it to a computer and get all kinds of printouts, which... U-H-2-A-S-A-Y, back to that.
AC2GS? Go right ahead, Roy.
Exactly, no. More than one. So there is calibration. The packages that are sold as nano VNAs include calibration SMA connectors. You can do the little thingy there. And you can plug it into different things that lets you output the information and display it on your cell phone screen, and I'm sure there's some computer program that does the same thing there. It seems to be the most actively way that I...
The noise on the machine took out some of your words, but we got 90% of what you said, Roy. Considering the size of the screen and the amount of resolution you need, 100 points is more than enough, in my opinion. Some of the Hewlett-Packard machines and others make measurements at 1,200 points. 1,024. What is that? 2 to the 10th power. 1,024 points. But 100 is more than enough. One of the things I don't know about your nano VNA, Doug, is does it have a calibration procedure? Can you give it a short and open and a dummy load on the end of your test cable? Say, for instance, you're measuring a filter. You've got a cable coming from the VNA as the signal generator going to the filter. You've got another cable coming from the output of the filter coming back to the VNA. And so if you put a female-to-female bullet as a dummy straight-through device instead of the filter you're testing, and you could be calibrating the cables. So does your nano VNA have a calibration procedure? It's not mandatory, but it would be a nice sophistication if it had it. W-A-2-S-A-Y, K-2-R-I-W, you got it, Doug.
It's W-A-2-S-A-Y. Yes, it comes with a couple of short cables, I guess about maybe 6 or 8 inches long, and it comes with, at least a short, a load, and an open. I don't know. I think it may come with two loads. But at least the guy... I have them here, but they're not marked, so you have to kind of guess what you have or measure it with an ohmmeter or something. Anyway, yes, it does. It has a calibration procedure for those.
Right. So I think you're telling me... At the 100 points where it stops and makes a measurement as it's sweeping across the screen very rapidly, you don't even see all those 100 points. It does it all so fast. So it stores those 100 pieces of data as to what is the insertion loss and maybe the phase shift of the cable. With the usual VNA, the full calibration procedure consists of at least putting a 50-ohm load on the input cable, a short and an open on the input cable, and if you're going to make a through measurement like a filter, you're not just going to measure its input visual, then you need a pass-through device. In other words, the ability to connect the two cables together with a bullet device. So, your total calibration kit consists of at least one dummy load, 50 ohm, one short, one open, and one straight through. And so you probably don't need to measure input reflection of the device and output reflection simultaneously. You really can just measure input reflection, and if you want to know what the output reflection is, you just put the filter in and turn it around and put it in backwards on the cable, if you know what I mean. My guess is that's what they do. It's probably a two-display device where you can look at two parameters. You can look at the frequency versus reflection coefficient, and can you display that as an XY plot as well as a polar plot is my next question, Doug. Will it give you a polar plot, which really is a Smith chart? The B2SAY with his new toy, a Nano VNA, K2RIW. Go ahead, Doug.
And Dick, this is WA2SAY. Yes, it does provide a Smith chart. That's the main reason I bought the thing. And I think it's going to put this other outfit that advertises it all the way in the back of QST out of business. They sell a device which provides Smith chart output over the ham bands for about $330, I think it is. And this guy does it for $50. Yes, it does. It does a Smith chart, and the calibration comes with the. It comes with the, as they say, a bullet, so you can go a straight through measurement. And I can't think of anything that it's missing, really. It's a wonderful device. Of course, I'm not doing anywhere near as much RF stuff as I used to do, but I just wanted to have this.
Once a person gets used to the learning curve of a vector network analyzer, a signal generator plus detector with the right kind of a computer backup for the display of input reflection or standing wave ratio, gain or throughput characteristics. So, boy, it does it all. Wow. That's a nice machine for less than $100. Whereas the full-blown vector network analyzer, when Hewlett-Packard first came out with it, I think it was around $20,000. The modern-day ones are pretty close to $10,000. So less than $100, I think you said $50 is a real goodie. You've told me already, but I'm kind of forgetful. And I did get your new email, which I haven't completely read it yet. What's the brand name of this thing? It sounds like it is Chinese made. Is that true? And so I guess your only complaint is you didn't get a nice, easy to read instruction manual, owner's handbook, so to speak. But there's enough information online where, in a case like this, where the Chinese book that they give you, the Chinese equivalent of the owner's manual, where it's less than ideal, there's almost always a number of YouTube videos that will eventually appear where people will give you the missing information, if you know what I mean, in usual English, easy to understand form. W2SAY, K2RIW in the TechNet.
This is WA2SAY. Let me see. What did you just ask me? No user manual to speak of, and I don't know. It does come from China. Yes, of course. Everything comes from China nowadays. Anything you can afford to buy, anyway. And, I used to use one of these $10,000 ones when I was at work. And, yes, you can get spoiled easily by with having that kind of a device handy to measure things with. It certainly is nice. And here in the house up until now, I've been using like a sweep generator and a reflectometer and that kind of thing. That's all I had. So, but this is going to be something interesting. Anyway, I think we've probably covered it all. Unless you have any other questions, I'll listen out. WA2SAY, back to net.
Way back in approximately 1968, as I remember, when Hewlett-Packard first came out with the, I think it was called the 8510 Vector Network Analyzer, with a bunch of plug-in manuals for a polar plot or XY plot, plug-in modules, and so on. It was expensive, clunky, hard to use, hard to calibrate, and so on, with slotted lines and other things connected to it, phase shifters, trombone-like devices. Nowadays, that's all done electronically. My favorite vector network analyzer that I was using for 8 solid years was made by Rode and Schwartz. Rode and Schwartz makes a vector network analyzer that, my goodness, is that thing convenient to use. The Hewlett-Packard modern-day vector network analyzer, you calibrate it, and the I'm waiting for my audio to come back. The calibration lasts for a number of hours. You turn the machine off and turn it back on the next morning, and you're going to have to do a recalibration. It'll be a little bit off. Whereas in the case of the Rode and Schwartz, you calibrate it in February, and if you're only sweeping the exact same frequency during production run, you calibrate it in February, and in September it's still calibrated. And whether you left it on overnight or turned it off each night doesn't matter. I don't know what the hell they did inside that machine, but my goodness, does it hold its calibration. It must have a 9-door with a big lock on it on the inside for the data that it stores. The only exception to that is that if you calibrate it for a frequency run between 1 and 2 gigs, for instance, and later on you want to switch from 500 megs to 3,000 megs, well, that's a new frequency range. You can't just change the start and stop frequency. You do have to do a recal in that case, because the frequency, the 1,200 spots where it calibrates are going to change. So as long as you're not changing the low and high frequency end, then you don't have to ever recalibrate it once you've done it once. Now, in the case of the $10,000 machine, the calibration kit that comes with that, which is good to, minus 40 dB reflection coefficient on the dummy load and so on, that calibration kit is quite expensive when it comes to it, traceable to the Bureau. We amateurs don't require anywhere near that kind of accuracy. If your instrumentation tells you you've got a 1.71 standing wave ratio, and it's really 1.75, that's close enough. It's telling you what you want to know. So, the guys who are listening out there of us saying all these great things about a vector network analyzer, if you've got any questions about it, how to use it, what good is it, should you bother investing in this nano VNA, if you've got any comments, questions, or whatever, give us your call letters and your name right now, K2RIW in the TechNet.
WB2GXM, Rich.
WB2GXM. Rich, go right ahead with your question, comment, or whatever. You got it, Rich.
Thank you, Zach. K4RW3WB2GXM. I would like to ask you a question tonight, which may tie into the nano VNA, but it concerns tuning magnetic loop antennas. So I just thought I would ask you, and it probably will involve the nano VNA or not.
According to Doug, we've pretty well covered his nano VNA. So you're number two on the runway. Go right ahead with your question. And what everybody calls a magnetic loop antenna, it's a loop antenna. It's a dipole where the ends have been connected together, so to speak. And is it magnetic? Yeah. Is a dipole magnetic? Yeah. But because it looks like a loop of wire, which looks like it will favor creating a magnetic field more than an electrostatic field, I'll go along with that. Let's call it a magnetic loop. But is there an E field present inside of a magnetic loop? Without a doubt. Over to you, Rich. WB2GXM, K2RIW.
Thank you, Dick. Well, my question is this. I have been researching the Alpha loop, which is the only commercially made magnetic loop that says it will cover all frequencies from 80 meters to 10 meters. Now my question is, I understand that you're going to tune the magnetic instead of using an antenna tuner. You tune the magnetic loop with its tuner. What would you use to measure the resonance frequency? Would you use an SWR meter? Would you use a vector network analyzer like the nano VNA or something else? WB2GXM.
Yeah, I'm going to go around the circle a little bit here and eventually zero in on your question. It's a good question, Rich, but I'm going to be giving you some background material. In the case of making a dipole, we all know what a dipole looks like. If you make the dipole too short for the frequency you're using it, so it's tuned too high, so to speak, it's too short and tip-to-tip length, it will act like a capacitor. Make the dipole too long, it'll act like an inductor. Why does it do that? In the case of a dipole that's too short, the signal you're sending down your transmission line to the dipole travels along the dipole, hits the end. All the signal doesn't jump into space immediately. Only 5% of the signal gets radiated when it goes down the dipole the first time. Hits the end, bounces off the end of the dipole, and comes back to the beginning. And if the dipole is too short, the signal comes back too soon, so to speak. A signal comes back too soon, we call that leading in phase, and we call that a capacitive reactance. That's just what we call it. If the dipole is too long, the signal comes back too late. Lagging in phase, we call that inductive reactance. If the dipole is just the right length, it comes back at just the right time. It comes back exactly 180 degrees out of phase from the signal that gets sent down the dipole, and now it's acting like a 50-ohm resistor if everything is set up just right. When you're making a loop antenna, that gets a little bit reversed. Let me drop. A loop antenna that you make too short. In the case of a dipole, you make it too short, it's a capacitor. In the case of a loop antenna, you make it too short, it's an inductor. It's a shunt inductor. Make the loop antenna too big, and it's a shunt reactor. It's a shunt capacitor. So it's a little bit opposite the loop versus the dipole of what happens when it's too small or too large. So if your antenna analyzer, and that's the ideal way to tune that is with a vector network analyzer or an antenna analyzer, which is telling you is the antenna inductive, capacitive, or right on. But that's the academic way of doing it. If you're just measuring what is the standing wave ratio, which really is how much signal is being reflected by the antenna. When the antenna is a perfect 50-ohm load, all the signal you send down the transmission line gets absorbed by the antenna and eventually gets radiated. But the fact the signal is bouncing back and forth, you don't know that when it's resonant. All you know is you see a 50-ohm resistor at the end of that transmission line. Let me drop. So just by measuring the standing wave ratio or reflected signal magnitude while you're sweeping in frequency, either with your real transmitter or with some laboratory instrumentation like a swept signal generator or a VNA, where you get the dip in the curve, the least amount of signal reflected, that is resonance. Because the most important seven words, if you're an antenna designer, in the English language, in my opinion, are you resonate first, then it will radiate. When your antenna is highly mistuned, much too short or much too long, mostly much too short. It's got a very big capacitive reactance if it's a dipole. It's got a big shunt inductance if it's a loop antenna. But in either case, it's very far off resonance. It's far from a 50-ohm resistor. A hell of a lot of the signal you send down the transmission line to the antenna doesn't stay in the antenna. It reflects off the antenna and comes back to you as a standing wave ratio or reflection, great big signal. So you're not radiating the signal because you're reflecting it. That's part of why we say resonate first, then it will radiate. And our definition of radiation is, let me drop, of the signal we're sending down to the antenna, we'd like 90-some-odd% of it to go radiating into space. And it turns out that radiation is difficult. On an ordinary dipole or your loop antenna, in either case, it's called a standing wave structure. That really means the signal is bouncing back and forth inside of the antenna at least 10 times before it finally gets radiated. Only 5% of the signal is radiated on each pass back and forth. And you want to resonate the antenna so that all those bounces stay in step with each other. And so you don't get leading or lagging phase. So any method you've got for measuring signal reflected, standing wave ratio, directional coupler reflected signal, or whatever, will tell you when it's resonant. Now, in the case of the magnetic loop usually is working on one frequency at a time. Oh, they've got some harmonic relationships where the loop, instead of being X wavelength long, is 3X and 5X and 9X when you're at higher frequencies. So they do have specific frequencies at which they come back into resonance. But in many cases, the magnetic loop that you're using on HF frequencies is usually quite a bit smaller than a resonant length. Therefore, there usually is some kind of an impedance matching network. It might consist of what looks like a Lecher wire. In other words, a twin lead-like device with a movable short, a trombone-like device, where you can move the feed point and move the short circuit to tune it. So a tuning structure, you can electronically resonate an antenna. In the old days, let me drop. In the old days, we amateurs made sure the antenna was exactly the right length, in the case of a dipole or a loop, so that it resonated at your frequency, one frequency at a time. Well, we eventually started using antenna tuners. With the antenna tuner, you can take the antenna that's too small, where it's a great big capacitive reactance, or it's too long, it's a big inductive reactance, as a dipole, and your antenna tuner can re-resonate that capacitor or re-resonate that inductor, so that once your antenna tuner combined with the mismatch antenna creates a match. And the antenna tuner, if it's a good one, doesn't waste any signal, doesn't turn it into heat, doesn't reflect it. It reflects it back to the antenna, yes, but doesn't reflect any of it back to the transmitter. So with modern day antenna tuners, you can take almost any antenna of any size and electronically force it to work on your favorite frequency. That's what's going on inside your cell phone. Your cell phone's trying to cover a zillion frequencies at once, or at least one at a time as you go to the various modes of operation. And there is an antenna, there is a integrated circuit chip right alongside of the antenna in almost every one of your cell phones that takes a tiny little antenna in there and forces it into electronic resonance, making it a good impedance match at each of the frequencies that you're in, that your cell phone wants to work at this time. So electronically resonating the antenna with an antenna tuner is perfectly valid, good science. It's not cheating. There's a zillion people out there who think that an antenna tuner just takes the reflected signal and throws it away. Absolutely not. It re-reflects it back to the antenna at just the right phase angle so that everything finally gets radiated. So there's a zillion ways you can tune the your magnetic loop. You can add all kinds of extra doodads. Magnetic loop usually has a secondary loop, which is the one that you feed, which is magnetically coupled to the main loop, which is a great big resonator that does all of the real radiating. That's one way of doing it. Another way of doing it is along the edge of your loop antenna, you can establish a gamma match rod, a T match rod, a delta match network, and so on. All the ways that you match ordinary antennas that are the driven element of a Yagi, for instance, every one of those tuning techniques will work on your magnetic loop. Just a matter of setting it up right the right way physically, or following the right instructions of somebody who's got a successful design. So some of these loop antennas that you can buy are extremely small in wavelengths, mechanical size wavelengths, and they got a great big tuning network in a black box at the base of the antenna. And by setting the controls on that black box, you can make the whole antenna work beautifully at 80, 40, 20, 15, and 10, and so on. So inside of that black box is the impedance matching antenna tuner is what's really doing an awful lot of that work. Because the loop itself, in many cases, is too small, at least at the 80 and 40 meters, if you know what I mean. So that's some of what I think you want to know, and you're allowed to ask a zillion more questions, Rich. Give it B2GXM, KQRIW in the TechNet.
Bravo Zulu.
Stand by, Richard. Bravo Zulu, go ahead.
Honestly, I've been fiddling around with a magnetic loop for a few months now. I haven't gotten it to work where I wanted to, and this one I built. But I think that tuning it, he's maybe talking about that all-important air variable. And the other way people tune it is with that matrix, with that loop that you feed the antenna with, changing its position and sound. Those are the ways.
We've had some dropouts on that transmission, but I think I know what you're talking about. So, I think you're saying, is yours a commercially made antenna, Rich? Bravo Zulu? Or are you, is it a homebrew? And I think you're saying you're having trouble tuning it. When you're saying you're having trouble tuning it, what are you using as a tuning indicator, and what indications are you getting? Are you saying you can't get it below a 3-to-1 standing wave ratio, for instance? Whiskey 2 Bravo Zulu, K2RIW.
W in the net, Whiskey 2 Bravo Zulu. That's exactly what I'm saying. I built it, it's homebrew, it's 17 in circumference, and the matching loop is, they're supposed to be 1/5 of the outer loop, 1/5 the size, which mine is, maybe a little bit under it. But I much difference when I turn the air variable capacitor. When I turn that, you're supposed to hear an increase in background noise, and you know your resonance there. Also, I've read up that the matching loop can help tune the antenna by moving it around a little bit, and also changing its size from, let's say, oval to egg shape. I've tried everything, and I can't get this thing down below, let's say, on 40, down below 5-to-1. Go ahead.
Okay. So you've tried changing the spacing between the small loop and the big loop. You've tried tuning its variable capacitor. And on 40 meters, you're not getting there. And changing it from a round to egg shape, that's a minor change. Changing its real diameter, adding more wire to that small loop, or taking wire out of the small loop, you may have to really change the circumference of a small loop in order to hit the right impedance match. So the small loop to the large loop is a kind of a transformer, primary and secondary winding, so to speak. And in the case of an antenna, you're not changing the number of turns like you would on a real transformer, changing primary turns and secondary turns. In the antenna equivalent, you're changing the true diameter of the small loop compared to the large loop and the spacing, and changing its orientation by tilting it a little bit so that it's not quite in plane, and by really changing the diameter. So you've run out of range of the particular loop you've got, as I see it, and now it's time to go to, say, a larger loop and then repeat the process. That's my think is your next step, Rich. Whiskey 2 Bravo Zulu, K2RIW.
The feeding set up copper pipe in a big loop, but it's not a small magnetic loop, as they call them, SMA, SML, whatever. This is a big one. And but the matching loop is 2 inches of exactly 1/5 of the size, 20% of the size of the outer loop. So, yes, I will change that. Now, I have some 8-gauge or 14-gauge wire to do that with. That matter greatly to you. I don't have any more of the copper pipe. I used it all up on the big and small loop. I wonder if that would make any difference. And, Dick, one thing I wanted to ask. On Sunday nights, I have a family commitment, so I get here about 8:20. But I was just wondering, if after you go through the list, I wonder if you could make some room for me. I have a question about working ham radio at 1.5 gigahertz. Well, not a ham radio, satellite at 1.5 gigahertz. Go ahead.
Yeah, part of what you're saying is that you don't get there until later on after I've taken the chickens. So I guess what I really should do is take my chickens at 8 o'clock and then take chickens again at 8:30.